many of them are pretty low to take. Coming. The last time I saw you all together was Mudset. Every year on the stage, drive 6 hours a day. But this time, over the last time, I have we have planned out this year to grant me a number of guest speakers coming throughout the year. One of the first things I do once we've confirmed is to ask the Akiba if they would like to utilise at one point or another the speaker while they're here. And in this particular time, I was amazed at how keen everyone, and especially the people who helped organise this, when they was to have Paragon, which I think is a credit both to Paragon and his reputation, but also to the keen and thirst for knowledge and morale that is present amongst the Bnei Akiva Madrachim. So first of all, a big thank you to those who helped organise this, but I think it's a real credit to you.
I suppose it's speaking tonight about leadership traits, and it's really pretty simple. Everyone turn around and look at Rabbi Shua, and you'll be able to. You don't really have to come to this year. And these are the types of things that are really hard to teach from texts, but I'll try. But the most important trait for leadership is to just find leaders and model yourselves after them with humility. To be good in life, wisdom, knowledge, talent, you can find in books. To be really great, you have to be in the context of great people. There's no shortcut. So these are the years you want to try to find great people who are idealists, who sacrifice comfort for passion, who stick to their guns and don't concede their values because pressure builds. Those are the types of people with conviction and principles. And when you hang around enough with these people, that's really the secret of our yeshiva. That's really what's in the water. Because you step into this yeshiva, and those of you who have been there have heard about it, you're just with such great people who are so accomplished, and could have done anything, quite frankly. They could have made their millions elsewhere. They could have entered whatever field they wanted to. They chose this, not because they needed to teach, not because they had no other choice professionally. I'm speaking about myself personally. I was involved in a half a dozen different pursuits professionally, but I chose to teach because this is my life's calling. I want to try to inspire people and help people. When you find those people and you live with them long enough, so try to find them. You have them here in Sydney. I'm sure is a great role model. I'll give a share, but it reminds me, have you ever heard of Upton Sinclair? He's a great writer. He wrote the Jungle Book. Not Upton Sinclair. So Sinclair Lewis was once invited to speak to the Columbia graduate program of creative writers. So he walked into this big hall, and there were 500 people assembled to get tips on creative writing. So Sinclair Lewis begins his comments, and he says, as I stand in front of you today, I ask myself, how many of you want to be creative writers? 500 people raised their hands. He says, so go home and write. And he closes his book and walks up the stage. So you can try to postulate and theorize about these things. You want to lead? Follow leaders. Spend your time with leaders. Through osmosis, you'll pick up many of these traits. You'll pick up that passion. Don't mimic anyone. That's a sorry image, trying to reproduce anyone else. Be your own star. Find your own strengths. Be your own persona. But when you feel and you live with people of passion, you tend to pick up some. But I do want to give you some tips, and I tried to prepare a source sheet that would be a little bit oriented around Pesach, so you have some things to think about over Pesach and the story to see at Mitzrayim. Can I just ask someone to loan me their sheet, if that's all right? Okay, we have a good leader here. What's your name? Okay, so the first trait of leadership is selflessness. And be the first person, not the last person to offer. Okay, when kids in my family ask me, why do I have to take out the garbage or the trash or the rubbish? And I say, it's your honor. Because any community you're a part of, you don't want to be a taker, you want to be a giver. And that starts from the second you join a community. And that family is a community, and you receive benefits in a family, and therefore you have to contribute to your family. First second you get married and you meet someone in your community, the first question you ask is, what are we going to do? I'm going to be the gabbai, I'm going to be involved in the Chevra Kadisha, I'll be on the Kiddush Club, I'll be whatever, I'm going to help out somehow the community. Because if you're ever in a situation of a social experience, what you're taking, it's very egocentric. If it's mutual and it's reciprocal, and you're giving and thinking, well, that's symbiotic. That's healthy. That's how we group together. Human beings are social animals. We don't live solitary lives. We don't hunt for our food. We live together. We help one another. But if you're only drawing, it's very, very selfish. If you're selfish, ultimately, some of those leadership skills really grow. So let's start with Yetzias Mitzrayim. Who wants to read the first source? I should have said you guys are a real budding coming to Chachamim. Who wants to read the first source?
I'll read it.
Okay, go ahead. Remind me your name again?
Miri.
Miri, I thought so. Go ahead. Okay, so what does the pasuk describe? What's the actual story the pasuk describes? Right, same. Mary's not just the leader, she's also contextually intelligent. What I mean is as follows. He didn't just read the pasuk, but he gave me the context. Context in life is everything, both in interpersonal relationships, in knowledge. My fault, I didn't give you the context. I was trying to crunch the text. But essentially what Mary told us is that this is a verse that appears as the Jews are leaving Egypt. Anyone know which parasha this appears in? It's in the very beginning of? B'shalach. What's your name? Chana. Vahi b'shalach parah ta'am v'lanochem alim derech eretz plashim kikarovu. And miss all those exciting psukim. Uvenei Yisrael, who can complete the pasuk? Uvenei Yisrael, Yaseu Biyad. Biyad Ramah. Chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim. These are some very, very exciting times. Listen carefully, everyone. There's a lot of energy. There's a lot of activity. There's a lot of excitement. A lot of euphoria. Big pictures are unfolding. Millions of people are flocking out of Egypt. There's a task that has to be performed, which is very menial, very small scale, very tedious, schlepping some coffin out of a Nile. Because according to our sages, according to Chazal, Yosef's coffin wasn't just entombed in a pyramid, it was actually submerged under the Nile River. I think the Egyptians were probably trying to hold on to it because he was a rock star and he was an icon. So they didn't want the Jews to remove Yosef's tomb. So here you got a situation where the world is spinning at breakneck speed. Events are unfolding with a rapidity that we captured through the matzah, right? That's how quickly they left Egypt. What's the word that describes how quickly they left Egypt? Kibazon. We didn't even have time to bake the bread. It takes 2 hours. That's how quick it all happened. There's excitement. There's energy. Boys, think about walking into the cricket stadium. You feel the buzz. You feel the excitement. Walking into the mall. Walking into the wedding. Walking into the bar mitzvah. Hundreds of people around. A lot happening. And then there's some ancient grandfather who no one alive ever met. By definition, if you're living through the Exodus, you've never met Yosef. And he's just some story. And it's not just some story, it's a moral obligation because we gave him his word. We gave him our word that will take his body. And now you're Moshe Rabbeinu, and you're saying, I got a million things on my mind. I'm leading millions of people. I'm defying the entire Pharaoh government and hierarchy. I'm performing plagues. I'm talking to God. Let someone else take care of this. Someone else, I'll just delegate to someone else. I've got enough on my plate. And amazingly, Moshe says, no, I want to be involved in this also. Because there's a moral code here. And a leader pays attention to detail. And a leader doesn't delegate, but leads by example.
And the leader doesn't get lost and ignore individuals, even though there's a swirl of throngs. Write this down. Remember for the rest of your life, the great thing about leadership is it makes you a better person. And even if you don't meet a soul, you just become a better person. You live on an island, you're just a better person. It's called mindfulness. It's called learn to zone in on the person you're speaking to and give them your full attention. Don't look at someone and talk to them while you're looking at someone else and talking to them figuratively. Don't play the crowd. Don't look around. Don't use people as silhouettes. Treat people with depth. Treat people with complexity. Each person is a world. When you're looking at them and talking to them, they should have your full, as best as possible, not always possible, your full, and if I ever get that feeling someone's talking through you, someone's talking to you, but they're really more interested in looking around and who's in there at the kiddush and shaking hands. And believe me, as Rabbi Yeshua says, somehow I'm condemned to be a public speaker, but I get this all the time. People line up to me and want to talk to me about the speech, shake my hands, take a Shabbos, introduce themselves. It's hard. I know I've got 15, 20 people waiting to talk to me. And sometimes there's some really important people with big fat wallets. Or really people feel very prestigious and they're waiting to get their time. And I'm talking to an old lady or something, but most of the community says, oh, it's just some senior woman. It doesn't make a difference. Her dignity is just as important and sometimes even more important to me than the dignity of someone that buys it from other people because of their prestige and social standing. So give dignity to people. Give mindfulness. Learn to hone in with your eyes on people. Look them in the eye. You guys, this is your challenge. Because your eyes are being consumed by screens. You don't really know what it means to look in people's eyes. When's the last time you looked in someone's eyes for 5 minutes while you're talking to them? It makes you uncomfortable. Like, oh, it's so invasive. It's not. It's just connecting. It's simply sharing your soul. Your eyes are the window to your soul. There's so much in this one little pasuk. Lead by example. Show people. Do the hard work. Do the difficult stuff. You want your kids one day to be active and industrious. You have to be the industrious one. Pick things up, take out the trash, work hard, don't delegate. Even to this day, when I take cabs around the world, I have a hard time letting taxi cab drivers carry my luggage. One day, hopefully, I'll live long enough, I'll be too weak to carry my own luggage. But God, thank God, gave me strength. I'm not going to let that person feel that he's my inferior vassal or servant. He's going to carry my luggage for me. We're equals. Maybe I'll carry one piece, I'll carry another piece. But just because I'm paying him to take me from location A to B doesn't make me his superior. And him, my inferior. And it's that level-headedness, mindfulness of Moshe. He doesn't get lost in the storm. It's easy to get lost. Please, Miri, take a look at this pasuk on Shabbos in Parshat B'Shalach. The few psukim before are triumphant, magnificent, loud, grandiose. V'hi B'Shalach. There's like an explosion of color. And the psukim afterwards are equally triumphant. They're all marching. Everyone's moving. This is very domestic. It's very quiet. Vayikach Moshe es atzmos Yosef imo. He's the one. It's an old phrase. Learn it well. Want to get something done? Ask a busy person. It's counterintuitive. Because the person's busy, they don't have time. But the logic is, if they're busy, it's because they're effective at task performance. And if you want three words, live this credo. Why not me? Some people ask, why me? And they're always those people who ask, why me? You'll find a laundry list of excuses from here to wazoo. Why me? You can always find reasons to take yourself out of the picture. You want in, you want out. Why not me? Why can't I also do that? At a certain point, the answer sometimes has to be no. Why not me? Because I've got other people in my life that need me more. Right? I'm sure if there are, I'm talking specifically to the women here. You have to protect yourselves because there's a natural generosity that females possess, maternal instinct, desire to give. You got to learn to check it sometimes, especially when you're married, when you're a parent sometimes, because you'll give and give and give and give till your heart is so depleted of energy, and nothing left to give. And then you're empty. There's nothing left to give. Except men sometimes have it also. But women have that danger a little bit more acutely. And you have to face it, Meretz Hashem, one day when you have a family and you have children and you're stretched, raised within, and you're all over the place professionally, communally. But this is such a powerful vision. Moshe Rabbeinu, you don't get any better than that. Yetzias Mitzrayim, you don't get any busier than that. This is the day. Tesvav Nisan. And you know what? No one's watching. Write some of these things down. Come back to them. Courage, not how strong you are, how brave you are. It's the ability to take bold action when no one's watching. Typically, we like to act heroically when people watch so we can get the applause and the approval. When's the last time you did something principled and noble and no one saw it? Do you even have the ability to appreciate how powerful that experience is? Because we live in the Facebook age of self-promotion and we're looking for likes and approval and people to study our lives and our experiences, right? Ask yourself, how wonderful do you feel when you get a like? Is that healthy? Different conversation, next time. Dangers of social media. I'm very active in social media. You're all welcome to friend me. I don't troll. I just post Torah. But if you follow my Facebook, you'll realize what I try to do on Facebook very quickly. Not to promote, but to connect. There's nothing about me. I don't exist on Facebook. And sometimes you'll see my picture when I'm connecting you to something I'm going through that I think people want to see. A shiur, an experience, or something in Israel. But there's nothing ever about me. It never comes back that I want you to see what I'm eating, what I'm doing, what I'm running. The end point is never me. Sometimes there's a me that's trying to get you to something that I'm experiencing through me. That's called connecting, not promoting. Moshe's not a promoter. Imagine Moshe Rabbeinu, one hand with the cloth in the other hand, posting to his Twitter feed. At Moshe Rabbeinu, lug in the coffin here. Hashtag Yosef. It's ludicrous. Those are the creatures you're becoming. And not only that, but he makes it personal. Anyone know how many zones there are around the Beit HaMikdash? The Machane Shechina, the Machane. What's the next zone? Levia, very good, Miriam. And beyond that, Machane Yisrael. And those three sectors have banned entry, depending on who's Tameh, who's not Tameh. So, for example, someone that's come into contact with a dead body can't enter the Machane Shechina, the Beit HaMikdash. But they can enter the zone of the Levim, or the Levites. How do we know this? So the Gemara Nazir says that Moshe Rabbeinu, his entire 40 years in the desert was Tamei Meit. And where did he live, being a Levite? With the Levim. So if Moshe was Tamei all 40 years, then evidently someone who has come in contact with a dead body can live with the Levim. Why was Moshe Tamei all 40 years? Because he carried the bones personally. He didn't just lug them out and then send them off. What word? Who can look at that word, the pasuk that Miri read, suggests? Let's see if you can think like Chazal. Which word suggests that it was personal to Moshe? He didn't delegate it as some ugly, menial task to others. Imo. What's your name?
Shana.
Very good. Imo. Vayikach Moshe as Atzmos Yosef. Imo. The Gemara says, source number two, the second source. Tamei meit mutar likanes b'machne levia. Last four words. Who wants to read the last four words? Someone else not named Mary or Shana? What's your name?
Eli.
Tika. Now, there were times Moshe didn't have the bones with Yosef with him when he had to speak Dashem. So it was attitudinal, not practical. He didn't have it every minute. But he nursed it through the end. Some people start projects and give up. Believe me, I work with a lot of those people. You take something, see it to its conclusion. It's called the last 10%, and it's always the hardest. Getting to 90, escape, easy. The last 10, see projects to their conclusion. Personalize it. Work at it, personalize it, it's yours. You take responsibility, the buck stops with you. You're the one they're gonna call. Now, you may have to delegate this task with that task, but follow through. Coordinate, especially in a day of quick communication. It's relatively easy. Form a quick WhatsApp group. Get your ego out of the way. That's hard. Come to me when you're 40. Until you're 40, it's hard. It's an old expression. When you're 20, you care about what people think about you. When you're 50, you don't really care much about what people think about you. When you're 80, they don't think about you anymore. So you still care about what people think about you. Try not to. Shine from inside. You don't really care much, not in a way that's offsetting and arrogant and condescending. I don't care about people. But your beauty should not be a product of what people think of you, and constantly playing to the crowd and how people seeing me and soldiers and things. Just believe in yourself. Believe in what Hashem gave you, where you're heading in life. I mean, you're all young kids and you're growing up, but I can see the people you're becoming. I can see you in 20 years sitting at Seder tables, sitting with kids, sitting with grandkids, changing communities, living lives of principles. Not all of you, I hope all of you, but it's there for you to choose. You just have to make courageous decisions. Don't make decisions based on insecurity and people's attitudes and people's opinion of you. Again, not in a way that's condescending and arrogant, just in a way that's really deeply principled, because you can't buy principles. Once you start to squander them and live life based on convenience and attitudes, and that's a pretty quick fall. It's a pretty quick fall. It's hard to recover from that. Hey, Gil, welcome. Good to see Gil. That's a person of principle. Okay. So, we discussed a couple lessons of leadership, right? Mindfulness. Hone in on people. Show them respect. Moral integrity. Do what's right because it's right. Train yourself. Do what's right. Say it to yourself. Do what's right because it's right, not because people are watching. No one's watching Moshe. He never met Yosef. Yosef isn't his grandfather. Levi is his grandfather. Moshe is a Levite. Moshe could have easily said, let the Levim take care of it. Let the Bnei Yosef take care of it. I'm a Levite. I'm a leader. I'm busy. I got better things to do. Train yourself. These things take conditioning. Live by a moral code. It's hard. I know it's hard. But you force yourself, all of a sudden you feel this dignity inside. I'm not living because people are watching. I'm living because I'm trying to do what's right. And there's inner voice, inner conversation, and I don't really care what people say. That's a frequency you dial into. All of a sudden, your life changes. It becomes a lot more rich. Okay? Let's now see what happens a little bit after Har Sinai, a little bit after Kriyat Yam Suf. Moshe's father-in-law visits. And it's a strange story, because why do we need to see Yitro's visit to Moshe? Shouldn't Parshat Yitro begin with Har Sinai, which is really the climax and the high water mark? So who wants to read source number 3, Vahimi Macharat? Now we got to get a boy here. We got to even it out, okay? Hello, manpower, okay? Wounded male pride in the 21st century, okay? Go ahead. Vahimi Macharat.
Vahimi Macharat.
Okay, good. By the way, males, stop trying to hide your frumkeit. There's nothing wrong with being frum, okay? Especially in front of girls, okay? One day you'll be a father. And as much as we're reaching an equality and egalitarian world, and thank God we're empowering women, and believe me, I'm a teacher of women also. Your responsibility is to bring Kedusha and Tara into your home, yours, as well as your wife's. But it starts with you. And the benching has to be serious. And the tefillos and brachos have to be serious. And when it's a halacha question, you don't just fudge it because no one's watching. Well, you stop in your tracks until you get a halachic answer. Kids are watching you, just like you're watching your parents. Can't fool your kids. You want your kids to be religious-minded? You have to sense that it matters to you and that these things are serious. I'm not a self-promoter, but I'll self-promote one share. You're all welcome to follow about 2,500 share on YU Torah. You're welcome to listen to any of them. I don't care less, believe me. A couple years ago, there's a picture that went viral on the internet of a chassid sitting on a plane in a bag. Why would a chassid be sitting on a plane in a garbage bag? Answer? He didn't want to be tamei because he was a kohen. And the whole internet went viral laughing at this poor laughing stock. And I said, and I put out a share, everyone has their bag moment. Because the real answer is, obviously, if you're a Kohen, don't get on a flight without knowing its flight pattern. Don't do things that are silly. But put yourself in this situation. Let's say you're on that flight. You got the wrong flight. You got rebooked. You're on the plane. You're a Kohen. There's no choice here, girls and boys. You get in the bag, proverbially. Because it's halacha. And it's eternal. And the consequences of violating Hashem's will are a lot more grave than what the guy next to you is thinking on the plane. And you got to get that through your heads. You got to zone in and zone out. I'm in Dubai the other day. I zone everyone out in the airport and I put on my tefillin. Because the notion that I'm going to miss a day of tefillin, I'm going to like cry when I say it. I can't fathom it. Can't fathom missing a day of tefillin. So I'm going to let a couple people scorning me saying, difference does it make to me? I was stopped at customs. Well, I've been traveling too much, but was it in Melbourne? No. Sydney, Melbourne. Coming into Australia because I didn't fill out my card and didn't know whether I was Israeli, American. Just making small talk. Making small talk with me. Don't fool a fooler. He says, where are you from? I said, I'm from Brooklyn. He says, okay, got it. Let me teach you how to speak in Brooklyn. I said, okay, so obviously you're an American. Okay. I grew up in Brooklyn, okay? No Arab's going to scare me. Okay. I went through hell growing up. People were mugging me left and right. We call it, watch you 12 and 6. 12 and 6. I'm actually walking in Cape Town the other Shabbos. And like I'm walking to shul, and the rabbi saw me and was trying to surprise me. So he and his little children were like running and trying to surprise me and catch up with me. You don't surprise a Brooklyn guy. I turned around, got in that military style. I mean, not really, but the fist clench. So Dubai, piece of cake, breakfast. My main source of fiber. Okay. Brooklyn's whole different story. Okay. So Moshe listens to these people and their questions day and night. Vayeshev Moshe l'shpod ha'am, vayamor ha'amal Moshe min ha'boker ad ha'arev. Now, this is open cross-gender, because we're tied. Either gender can answer. Although I know the girls are about to say it. Okay, I know the way these girls work. They want straight out already students. And the guys are still trying to play the rebel. Okay, I'll get together, guys. Don't worry. When does this parsha, when does this pasuk appear? Seriously, where does this pasuk appear? Which parsha? Before or after Matan Torah? Before. What in the heck were they asking Moshe? They didn't know the Torah yet. They didn't have any mitzvahs. What were their questions? Day and night. Day and night. What took so much time? So I'll tell you a story. The story goes about a Hasidic Rebbe. And one by one, his students would come and ask him questions. This is really important. Guys, listen, really important leadership skill here. And one Hasid came and said, Rebbe, what am I going to do? My wife, she's so ill. She needs a Refuah Shleima. The Rebbe says, oh, your wife is ill. Say some Tehillim. Give some Tzedakah. Learn some Mishnayos, Meseches Kiddushin, in honor of your wife. She'll have a Refuah Shleima. Next Chassid comes and says, Rebbe, I don't have a parnasa. I can't earn a living. I'm trying so hard to scrape together. He says, oh, you don't have a parnasa? Give some Tzedakah. Learn some Mishnayos, maybe Bava Metzia, which talks about profits, profit margins. Say some Tehillim, you'll have a Refuah Shleima. Next Chassid comes in and says, Rebbe, my daughter, she needs a Shidduch. I just can't find a good Shidduch for her. Oh, your daughter needs a Shidduch, the Rebbe says. Say some Tehillim, give some Tzedakah, learn some Mishnayos, Ksuvos, and your daughter will have a Shidduch. It's now 3:30 in the morning, and the Rebbe and his Shamish, that's the person that would help the Rebbe home, we're walking home, teach you guys a little Yiddish. Sebrachen. Anyone know what Sebrachen means? What does it sound like? Sebrachen. Yiddish is just bastardized English in German. Sebrachen. Sebrachen. They're broken. They're walking home, Sebrachen. Okay? Anyone here eat gebrachts or don't eat gebrachts? The bread is broken before. It has water on it. So it's all broken. It's 4 in the morning, and the chassid comes running down the street and says, I need to speak to the Rebbe. I need to speak to the Rebbe. And the shamash says, well, can't really say because I'm a rabbi. You know. WTF! Get out of here! Sends an emoji to him. And the Rebbe says, oh, no, let them come. Let them come. And he looks at the Rebbe, and he says, Rebbe, he's crying. Tears are streaming down his eyes. He says, Rebbe, I got a real problem. My cow has an excruciating, ear-splitting headache. My poor cow is in absolute pain. What am I going to do with my cow? My poor cow. So the Rebbe looks the chassid in the eye and says, that's a really big problem, the cow. You know what you should do? Say some Tehillah. Give some Tzedakah. Learn some Mishnayos, maybe Meseches Para. And I promise you, your cow will have her for sure. It's now 5 in the morning.
Most people are waking up. The Rebbe is lying down for a few minutes before Shacharis. And the Shamash looks at the Rebbe and says, I can understand the guy whose wife needed her for Shalema. I can understand the guy who didn't have a parnasa, the guy who didn't have a shidduch for his daughter, but you have nothing better to do in the morning than deal with this wretched chassid and his fashtaket account. And the Rebbe says, you're missing the point. He wasn't talking about his cow. He wanted to spend time with me. The cow? That's just the pretext. You got to learn the language of people. People don't know how to say, I need you. But they say it in different languages. And sometimes they can't even say it, and you have to say it for them. Apsachla. You got to learn that language. When is your chanich just saying, I want you? I want you to spend time with me. I come from a broken home, maybe. All I hear at home is screaming and fighting. And I just need that calm. All I hear at home is mocking religion. And I want to feel some pride. Or I'm just confused in life. And you're a little bit further down the pike. And I just want to feel the clarity and the calm that you have. And the confidence that I can make it. And you know what? Learn not just how to listen, but learn how to speak. What do you mean learn how to speak? You all know how to speak. Yeah, with your mouths. But sometimes you speak with your hands. Don't be afraid to put your arm around your female chanicha, if you're a female, your male chanich, if you're a male. In different ways. Doesn't have to be crazy. Obviously, in today's world, be careful. But that's also a way of communication. Let them feel that there's a stabilizing force, that I'm there for you. That whatever happens, you have me. Look them in the eye. Talk with your eyes. Sit closer to them. Grab their attention. Let them look into your eyes. Touch them on the leg if it's appropriate. Again, be careful to do things that are appropriate, and those always change. But that's what leadership's about. It's about giving people the sense of confidence. I believe in you. You can make this work. I'm here for you. I'm doing it. I don't know my way better than you, but I'm a little older. Don't underestimate that type of influence you can have by just being there for these confused kids who are facing a world of swirling. Don't add to the swirl. Be as sincere as you can. Doesn't mean be boring. You're not rabbis. You're not 50-year-old. Just don't add. There's enough cynicism. Get the cynicism out of the conversation. Because that's the world they're living in, where everything is fake, everything is distrusted, and everything is shallow, and every politician is a scoundrel. That's really the problem of social media. Because what really makes the news? The scandals, the controversies, the corruptions, the sex scandals. And you think the world's a bad place, because those are the people that grab all the volume and the airspace and the bandwidth. And I'm not sure, you may be part of that generation that still thinks that people are bad. People are really good. 99% of the people in this world are really good people. It's the 1% that commit all these terrible crimes and grab the news and shout the loudest, tink their hair the brightest, and the peacocks running around to get everyone's attention. So you think of the world. I hope you don't, but I'm sure your 15 or 14-year-old kids or your 12-year-old kids are starting to think that way. You have to say, no, I'm different. I'm not sarcastic. I'm not making fun. I'm not taking a pot shot at someone just to be cool, just that people around me should look at me better. And I'll say something. I'll defend someone's integrity. So that's Moshe's second scene. You learn a lot from Moshe, man, right? From Bones and from the fact that he's there day and night. Here's another big one from Moshe Rabbeinu, okay? Listen to what I'm about to tell you. It's not about leadership, it's about life. You get this, you owe me. And I'll come collecting, because it'll change your life, and it'll be three times as productive, and you'll have me to thank for it. Getting up in the morning is not 99% psychological. It is 100% psychological. 100%. There are two types of time management, macro and micro. Macro is X per Y.
Every person is different. You can change that broad scale. But let's say for every 7 days, you need 7 hours of sleep a night on average. You need 50 hours of sleep a week. Let's just say. You can start to calibrate that. But that's macro. I'm not talking about macro. Micro is there is nothing ever that will prevent you from getting up on a dime at any given moment, no matter how tired you are. That is pure, unadulterated willpower. That's all it is. It's willpower. Nothing more. Staying up and working beyond the exhaustion point. I'm not talking about macro. We'll catch up with you. You have to catch up when you sleep. You have to manage it. If you're sick, if you're... You know, the hardest thing for me, I've been sick for 3 weeks. Hardest thing for me is the doctor told me I have to go to sleep an hour early a night. It's like death. It's like putting me to the guillotine, stealing an hour from my life. And I was like, a nightmare. But I know I had to do it. What if someone told you? You're all planning to live today. Life expectancy is about 90 years. What if someone told you you're going to die at 60? You'd be horrified, right? Well, you're all facing that sentence, because if you sleep 8 hours a day, you're losing a third before you sneeze. Now, you can't really escape that, but you can play with it. But that's something else. But learn not to be a slave to fatigue. Learn if there's something important to do. You don't rest your head until it's done. And when you get up in the morning, you get up for Shacharit. That's the best message, by the way. Your kids see you coming to Shacharit Shabbos morning at 8:45 or 9 o'clock, whenever it starts, walking into shul, kavana out the window. As far as I'm concerned, overrated. Standing in shul at attention in front of God, that's where it's at. And if you're chit-chatting and breaking down the whole situation to irreverence and just about me, 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 that you can't control. Kavana is hard to control in today's world. But respect the moment. You know what happens if I see my kids standing like this in shul? I say, stand up straight in front of my shul. Tuck yourself in. Don't sit on the back of the chair. Stand up at attention. Meet God. Your mind is flooded with a lot of ideas. But you get on at the moment. It kills me. It tears my heart out. One of the basic things, you walk into shul and the Hashem's there. And you just sit quiet. I don't have kavana half the time. But I know Hashem's there. I live with that presence. So Moshe, it's late at night. He's exhausted. His father-in-law is worried sick. But he just has the stamina, and he does it. You know why I can do it? Because I saw a great man do it. A lot of you have heard of Rav Lichtenstein, great gadol. It's a man who used to fly in from America, 12-hour flight, at the age of 70, and give shiur for 15 hours straight without sleeping. And anytime I get tired, his image pops up in my head, and I say, you don't have the right. Who are you? You should be embarrassed. Push yourself further. Bring it to the next level. Dig deeper. That's why you need people like that. You need these role models. In every part of life, you need role models, not just in sleep in general. I once asked Rav Lichtenstein how to face a certain nisayon or yetzahara, and he said, don't think in abstract. If you feel yourself getting angry, you know you control your temper, which is really important at this age. Think of the person who role models temperance and forbearance, and ask yourself, how would that person respond in this situation? Make it concrete. Because if you make it abstract, you'll always self-justify. Well, I have the right to be angry because my mom said this, my dad said this. Feel yourself being jealous or petty or small. Ask yourself, how would my moral role model behave? Have an image. Some of you are maybe lucky to have one moral role model for all of them. It's very uncommon. I had that. But it's more likely that you'll find a role model for this trait and a role model for this trait and a role model for that trait. And you just have it in your back pocket, like an app. You pull it up and say, oh my goodness, I'm feeling pretty petty. I'm feeling pretty selfish right now. Let me think of, oh yeah, that person wouldn't act like this right now. It could be a mother, a father, a grandparent, friend, madrich, Israeli, whatever. But try to have these people in your life. And we have less people in our lives, of course, because we're disconnecting from people, and that's where we have the moral decline. So I tend to get lost. So where are we up to now? What time do we have to end? Don't be bashful. Okay, so we'll end with one more. Someone pick a pasuk. Let's see what we'll end with. Mm-hmm. Someone want to suggest a topic for leadership? Okay, let's talk about conviction, even when the world doesn't seem to be going your way. Okay? I talked about Moshe Rabbeinu
and taking the bones of Yosef. And I told you about Moshe persevering and paying attention to people and listening to their stories. Right? MTA guys, you remember Vitarig and I have a question. And should I scratch my nose this way? I scratch my nose that way. It's all just tying together. Find time for people together. Now let's talk a little bit about
sticking to your guns and get a picture. The Torah describes the birth of Moshe in a very strange way.
Let's see if we have the pasuk here. Yeah, who wants to read pasuk 4? Fourth pasuk. Vayelech. Okay. Can't say no to such a smile. Also, really important. I don't want to embarrass you. Just smile. You can change people's lives that way. Just learn to smile. Just bring brightness into people's lives. You don't feel like it. By the way, it's been proven, if you smile yourself, you feel a little better inside. So that's like the easy. Easy. Smile at people. Just be a happy person. Happy inside. You have to be happy inside for it to be real. If you're not happy inside, then they see through the fakeness. Or just, you know, see a good smile. Go ahead. You get the pasuk. Vayikach, vayelech ish. Whoa. Talk about going incognito. Ish, levi. If you know what I'm talking about, you got to be worried. It's because I'm a tech. Can I control N on Chrome? Good. Thank God you don't know what it is. That's when you're going on sites you shouldn't be going to. You know, people track you. I happen to be an old hacker, so I used to hack into that. I'm an old IBMer, so I know what incognito surfing is. Okay. So, talk about a pasuk going incognito. Ish mi beis levi vayikach es bas levi. Who's really being described here? Who's the beis levi? Yocheved and Amram. Very good. Why the anonymity? Why are they put into the witness protection program? Like, where are they going? In America, you move to the Midwest, you assume some name. John E. Smith and Caroline B. Who are these John E. Smiths and Jane Does? We know who they are. So the answer is, this is a generic story that rippled far beyond Amram and Yocheved. Because what happened was Amram got frustrated.
And Amram said, I already have Aaron. So in China, they were making me have a big family. And I got Miriam, so I'm really ahead of the curve there. And now I'm going to have another child just to feed the crocs because the decree had already been imposed. So he gives up. And walks out. Now whether he divorces a Yocheved or they just discontinue marital relations, or they just walk away.
And then Miriam gets up and says, no, Dad. It's not the way it works in life. You don't get to control the big picture. That's God's. You do get to control the small picture. That's yours. You never lose your decisions. You sometimes don't know where the decisions will have impact. But they're still your decisions. And your decision right now is to hold your ground. And to do what you do. And to have children. And to be married. Because if you and Ima separate and already started, well, you're leaders and everyone's going to follow suit. So this reunion that Miriam coaxed was not just Amram and Yocheved, but was a ish, me beis levi, taking a bas levi. Everyone's watching, and the marriage is continued. And you're going to hit those bumps in the road in life where things don't seem to be working. But you can't really get the overall calculus. Where's God, and why is this happening to me, and how is this going to really change? That's when you fall back upon two things. And these should never change. In this order, halacha and morality. Halacha's first, obviously. Obviously, there are issues that halacha didn't speak about, but doing the right thing. That's you. You may not be able to affect the overall calculus. Leave that to God. But you still have decisions. And those are yours to make. And they shape your world. And whether the world around you will accommodate your decisions or be impacted has nothing to do with the rectitude of your decisions. I call it the island test. You're on an island. You're not affecting anyone. Do you still live life the right way? Halacha, then I guess morality to coconuts or whatever. Morality is generally the social setting, but it has to come down to that. There has to be a baseline where I'm trying to, because you know what? As much as you're young and aspiring, and you should, and I want to take that from you, the world's a pretty complex place. It's not always going to buckle to your whim. It's not going to shape itself to your authorship. Believe me, I'm trying with a lot of effort. But there's life, and there's a lot of people. There's a lot of complication in this world. Try your best out there. But this is the world you control. Who you are and what decisions you make. And whether you make the right choice or the wrong choice, even if it doesn't ever ripple to any outcome. Read Viktor Frankl. A little bit of Viktor Frankl's voice. Anyone hear Viktor Frankl, Holocaust? It's a very dramatic setting, but not to go dramatic like that. When I used to interview boys for yeshiva, I used to ask them the following question. If you could go into a time machine and visit one time in Jewish history, which time would you want to visit? I wanted to try to probe who they were as Jews. So about 15 years ago, some boy looks at me and says, Rabbi, where would you go? So first of all, I gave him a big check because I like people with moxie. It took a lot of guts to ask me that question. So I gave him a big check. I said, if I go back to one point in history, I'll go back to Auschwitz in 1945. Walk out with the survivors. Nightmare world. It's black. It's dark. Unyielding. Inscrutable. What's the first thing these people did? They had children. They remarried. They found a niece, a sister's friend, a friend's something or other from their community. Let's build. Let's. How could you bring people to this world? And 2020 hindsight lets us know that the kids born in 45 and 46 and 47, I mean, they're in Israel during the Independence War. They're fighting history. They're changing the world. They're the pioneers. They're these temple-wearing chalutzim that we see pictures of. But the survivors couldn't know that. And what type of moral courage must it have taken for these survivors to just do what they do? And excuse me for saying it, because the greatest man I ever heard and met once used this phrase. We were like thrilled that he actually cursed. And damn the consequences. What? Consequences? That's fresh air. You do what's right. Bring children into this world. Change the world. Populate the world. That's the message of Miriam. That's a Miriam message. It doesn't have to make sense. Could you imagine if Miriam stood down that day? No Pesach. No Mitzrayim. No Moshe. Hidden hero. Looking for a hidden hero of Pesach? Silent hero? Hero? Nothing grand? Very quiet? Changing people's mind? It's right here. Because if not for her, Moshe isn't born. If Moshe isn't born, who knows how it turns out differently. So everything Moshe does, it's because one woman makes one quiet decision and changes the will of her parent by saying, just do what's right. And you sometimes can't make sense of the world. Okay? So, as Sinclair Lewis said, if you want to be a leader, go out and lead. But here are some tips. And most importantly, the Rambam talks about different levels of tzedakah. 10 levels of tzedakah. You know the highest level? When the person that gives doesn't know who he's giving to, and the person that receives doesn't know who he's receiving from. There was actually a hallway in the Beit HaMikdash called Lishkat Chashayim, a very quiet, private place. And people would deposit money, and then certain other hours people would come and take. So no one met each other. That's the highest form of tzedakah. You know what? It's also the highest form of leadership. When you're not conscious that you're setting a role model, you're just doing your thing, and the person learning from you is not conscious that he's receiving, it's called life itself. Because if you're preening and on stage and showing everyone, then they're picking up that it's an act. And you're playing to the crowd. And you're a monkey in front of the accordion. If you're just marching to your own frequency, you're doing what you think is right, and you're leading your life, and people are living with you in a natural way, because they're your chanichim and chanichol, then you don't know that you're given. They don't know that they're taken. And that's when it really enters your heart. So never feel like you're on stage. Don't ever act on stage. Vastly different then you'd be at home, because they'll find out, and that hypocrisy will ruin it all. So you're different. I would like to think if you came to my house to visit me with my kids, you'd see more or less the same person. Maybe dressed differently, wearing a tie, who cares? I'm not hiding anything. You're not going to see a different person. You'll see the same me. Try to shrink the gap. Be yourself. Be natural. Don't act, which means you got to step up your game. So the real answer is, you want to be a good leader, be a great person, where no one's watching. The leadership is a spillover effect. Hey guys, Chag Kasher v'Sameach. It was great to meet all of you. Go out and lead, okay?
I definitely learned for myself a lot of messages for leadership, and I hope that everyone else did, and also not just for leadership, but for our personal life. So thank you, Ed.
What's about? Good luck to you. Good luck.
Kashera Sameach, everyone.
Are we going right away to Shalom now?
How are you?
How are you?
Good to see you.
Good to see you also. Welcome back.
Thank you. Oh,
Hashem.
How are you? Tuesday. So jet lag still getting hard.
Like the city?
Yeah, how's it been? When did you get to the city?
Yesterday.
How did you have a shiur in the city today, right?
Yeah.
I think my sister went, and my dad, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Oh. What's your dad's name?
Ma.
Oh, yeah, I bet. I didn't know your sister. What's her name?
Gila.
Where do you daven on Shabbos?
On Friday nights, I daven at Kilat Kadima, previously called Southend. And Shabbos day, I usually daven here.
Shabbos day, I'll be in Central.
Yeah.
So tomorrow night, come here. One Shabbos, you can afford it. Do you live too far?
I live about a 30-minute walk away.
I'm walking 40 minutes to Central.
Right.
No violin playing here, okay? You can walk 30 minutes tomorrow. See you tomorrow night.
Wait, where are you from?
Here. Right.
Here.
There's a meal. You can join for the meal here. Okay?
I'm sorry if I went there for that.
Why not?